Hey kids, welcome to episode 129 of the Countdown Movie and TV Reviews podcast. It's Tuesday the 19th of September 2017, and it's time to review movies and talk shit. My name is Wayne.
And my name is Paul. Welcome to the podcast where we count down movies, sometimes television, in order of awesomeness, so you do not have to. And Wayne, what are we doing today for this, well, episode?
American Assassin, bitch!
You'll notice my lack of the word special or monumental or important.
Why?
When I describe this episode, because they are words that all can apply to American Assassin. Mm-hmm. But jumping ahead there.
Okay, so we have a little like insight there. Yes, yeah. We're going to review American Assassin, which has Michael Keaton in it, and another guy.
And another guy named Dylan O'Brien, who I believe is from the Maze Runner films.
Is that so?
My research has revealed during the course of the week.
I'm like, is this guy new? Is he new? No. Yeah.
So it's not his debut, yet we've treated it like it is, because then we're going to count down the best 10 acting debuts in a film of all time, according to us.
According to us. Yeah. When you, mesmerized.
We're not experts on acting, particularly myself.
Or me.
But we think we know enough to pick what we like and to share it with you.
Righto.
Right. So that's the gist of this week's show. Wayne, you've been very ill all week.
Yeah, man. I've been sick like a bitch all week. Like a little bitch. And
so much so you missed the screening of American Assassin.
Yes. And I was like so doped up on various chemicals because of this flu that I had that I get this text from Paulie like, you know, deet, deet. Yo, man, I'm here. Where you at? And I'm like, holy shit, I completely forgot about the fucking advanced screening. And I said, dude, sorry, just use my name, go in, fucking walk in, that's it, fine. He caught it.
I did.
Alone, I'm very sorry about that. Because I know it's a different experience when you're watching a movie alone.
I don't think it would have saved the film if you were there.
Oh, really? Okay, we're gonna actually talk about this one, because I'm going to tell you, I didn't have the same thing going on.
Okay, there it is. And you obviously have seen it since.
Yeah, I went the next day and saw it, and had quite a nice afternoon. I didn't really, I was sick as shit. So anyway, other than that, I'm on the mend.
All right, well, we start every episode with something that we call the recount.
Who wants a recount?
Who
wants a recount?
Who
wants a recount?
Who
wants a recount?
Paul, tell us what happened out on the wire this week.
This week, in terms of listener feedback, we begin, as we usually do, with the results of the poll.
Oh, God, yeah.
Last week's show was the top 10 most disturbing films on the back of reviewing It, and whilst we both enjoyed It, as most out there have, Wayne's top 10 most disturbing films list was found a little wanting.
It was found incredibly wanting.
Yeah, so the final poll results here, Wayne, 4 votes.
4 votes.
Which I think
equals... kind people are like, oh, just throw him one.
Equals my wonderful effort from the top 10 rom-coms a couple of weeks. Oh, no, from the top 10 most overrated films. I had the least support there with about 4 votes to my 24.
24 votes. Now, listen, now just let me tell you something, right? It is absolutely right and just that I got ass raped on this particular one. There is no way I should have won. There's no way I could have won. Let me tell you, for example, Paul's number 10 movie, his least disturbing movie, involved people getting their fucking mouth sewn to other people's assholes and having it shat in. All right. That was his least disturbing movie. All right. My shit was like, it was a bit awkward. My shit was all normal stuff that people get disturbed about. But no one had to shit in anyone's mouth on my list. So he's definitely going to win.
So what you're suggesting is people should be far more concerned about my mental state than yours.
Nah, but like your shit was actually disturbing. And I just don't see those movies. So I knew I was going to get tanked on this one. It's fine, people. I understand.
Brings the overall score to 7-5. And if you're wondering, by the way, if you are a new listener, welcome to the show. If you're wondering where you can poll, vote, or vote on these polls, it's on our Facebook listener community group. Search for the Countdown Listener Community, and then you'll be asked to apply to join, and we will approve you if you are not a bot. If you are listening and you are a bot, well done. You are about to take over the world.
Yeah.
But for all real people out there, we are more than happy to approve you joining.
And I get a shitload of these bots, I tell you.
Yeah, you are the bot spurt.
Man, just smacking them out. Anyway.
Yeah. Okay. So, then we move on to a little bit more feedback from last week in the form of a message from good friend of the show, has her own podcast called the Retro Cinema Podcast, Gidget Von LaRue.
Gidget.
Gidget had this to say, Wayne. Excellent podcast, lads. Wayne was a bit of a pussy, but didn't expect anything less. Still love you, Wayne.
I'll take that completely.
Then later on she wrote and said, I think I was a bit harsh there. Tell Wayne I didn't mean it.
I shoot all kinds of things off Bridget, I understand.
From the quote-unquote Guilty Podcast, which is Joe, the head of our network, mm-hmm. Word Salad Production, which, by the way, if I can do a little plug for Word Salad Productions, over on patreon.com/wordsalad, you can contribute there and get exclusive content, not just from them, Joe, quote-unquote Guilty, and us, but also from Dealing with Philip, Cadavercast, and newy Word Salad Radio, which Joe is putting together, a short-form variety show putting out 10-minute scripted and unscripted content for your entertainment.
Wow.
Joe had this to say about the ongoing debate, Wayne, whether Casino Royale is a sequel or a remake.
This shit
or
will not.
What
will,
the fuck will, ever?
This is getting big, man, like my grandmother's cat. Go on. Way too big.
Disturbed.
Just way too big.
Disturbed in all manner of ways by that reference. Casino Royale is neither a sequel nor a remake. Says Joe.
Bollocks!
The two movies are adaptations of the same first Bond book.
Yes, I understand. However, in the broader scheme of this movie is the same as that movie, yet they were both adapted from a book a la Dangerous Liaisons and Cruel Intentions, you could argue one was a remake of the other anyway by virtue. So, just saying, man. I'm sure that'll come up, but whatever. Okay.
All right. I just report what listeners have said.
I understand.
I don't follow Bond enough to know really what the hell's going on there, but I just know you keep copying crap
for
it.
Well, you should know it's the bomb, and I'm right. So.
Of course you aren't. And lastly then, we threw out a plug for one network. Our other network is the Podfix Network, where last week I talked about a couple of new shows that have come on board, Gravity Beard and the In Session Film Podcast. I forgot to mention Ashley's podcast, Rabbit Ears Podcast.
I like Ashley.
They have joined the network, and not because of celebration, but just surreptitiously, I happened to be on the Rabbit Ears Podcast this week, where we talked about, with Chris from the Morgan.
Ulterior Motive!
Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Oh, how did that go?
It was awesome.
Yeah?
Had a lot of fun, Ashley.
Because there's no one who knows more shit about Buffy than Paul. Paul was in a Buffy forum before there were forums.
I talked about this on the podcast, so...
Good Lord.
There is no shame, well, very little shame here these days.
Sure.
And I had a lot of fun talking about there. So head on over to the Rabbit Ears TV podcast and have a listen, as well as to the Podfix Football. So bunch of the...
Podfix
Networkers have gotten together and done a fantasy football league. I'm not part of it because it's American fantasy.
I see.
And effectively, they are releasing episodes in that format. You can find it all at podfixnetwork.com.
Oh, God. Okay.
That's it. That's the end of the promotions, except for our own, Wayne. How do people get in contact with us so they too can be a part of the podcast?
Yeah, just search for us on Facebook by searching for the Countdown Movie and TV Reviews right there, or send us an email at thecountdownpodcast@gmail.com.
I am all over Twitter, and we are at thecountdownpc. You can find us on pretty much all podcatching apps except Google Play. Eat a dick, Google Play. And, of course, Apple Podcasts, where if you haven't subscribed to the show, please hit that button on the app that says subscribe.
Smash it.
Because that is what is going to help us rise up the listings. And no 50th review from Australia, so no trailers for Reap being dropped this week.
Keep it up, guys. Do nothing.
All right, let's break for a network promo break, and then we'll be back with the review of this week's apparently contentious film, American Assassin.
If those clips made you wish for the good old days of television, I've got great news. Rabbit Ears is a new TV podcast inspired by the days of foil-covered television antennas, rainbow-barred screens, and the national anthem signaling the end of the day's broadcast. Each episode, we look back on a beloved show, ranging from the golden age of television to more modern classics. With the help of a superfan guest host, we'll review, discuss, and reminisce about some of the most culturally impactful shows ever to air on television. You can find us on Instagram, follow us on Twitter at Rabbit Ears TV Pod, like us on Facebook, and download episodes on iTunes, Stitcher, and Podient. Thanks for listening.
American Assassin, the newest crime slash... That's not the right word.
It's more of a terrorist-y, spy-ish.
Spy-ish, that's the word we're looking for. Thriller from director Michael Cuesta, written by a whole bunch of people that you don't know, except Edward Zwick.
Oh, really?
Yes, and Marshall Herskovitz, who is also a familiar name, based on a novel, a series of novels, actually, by a guy named Vince Flynn.
That I didn't know.
Yeah, and it had a budget of $33 million, has only made 5.7 in its opening weekend thus far. It stars Dylan O'Brien, Michael Keaton, Sanaa Lathan, and Taylor Kitsch.
Yes. This movie is about a character played by Dylan O'Brien, and he suffers a terrible tragedy in where his fiancée is mercilessly gunned down at a resort by some terrorist assholes. He then just dedicates the next like year or so, 18 months of his life, to training himself, hunting down these terrorists so he can kill them. He catches the CIA's eye, and they're like, hey man, why don't you consider working for us? Together we can stop Taylor Kitsch. And that's basically the whole deal, okay? This was a... it's your... what you might consider your run-of-the-mill spy fare for a summer, you know, or whatever, right? And I personally liked it. I really liked it.
What?
Yes, I did. I knew what to expect. I saw what it gave us, the deal. Paul's grimacing, man. Because obviously he did not like it. And so I am surprised at that, because I was watching it and going, okay, well, this is, you know, it opens real hard-hitting and it fucking hurts.
I will agree with you.
All right?
The only good part of this film is the first half an hour, and it just goes steadily downhill.
No, why? Why does it go downhill?
Oh, we'll get into it in spoilers. Don't you worry.
Shit, okay, well, look, for me, this movie promises one thing, and then it delivers that one thing. And that's fine with me. That's fine with me. And I think as well, you could tell there's a little budget involved here, because the ending of the movie was actually big, though. The scale of the ending was big, as opposed to your usual, oh, we saved the Kremlin in time by hitting that button on the bomb. It wasn't that. It was something else.
I know what you're saying. I just thought the ending was ridiculous.
You've got to be kidding me. I love that ending. All right, this is going to be awesome. All right, this is going to be awesome.
As we've heard, I didn't like the film.
You can't believe you didn't like it. You must have hated it by the time
of the ending. I didn't hate it. Hate is too strong a word. It's not good enough to be hateable.
Oh, shit. That's actually worse. Damn.
Yeah, last week, I think I said somewhere along the line, the worst films to review on this show are the ones that just make so little of an impression. Like, eh. This
really?
Was an absolute eh film for me. The good parts were almost exactly balanced out by the bad parts, with the last act tipping it over into poor territory for me.
That whole thing didn't work for you?
Nothing. Nothing right. about the anywhere for me. Man. And we'll get into why as we progress.
Okay.
Because that would be spoilers. So Wayne's a big plus. I am a big negative, and I would play the Negatron sound effect, but it's gone off the soundboard.
Yeah, thankfully.
God damn it.
No one even knows what that shit is saying, so that's all good.
Inconceivable.
Balls.
Welcome back to the soundboard. First time he's been heard today. Sure, it won't be the last time she will be heard.
Well, I mean, shit, man, I don't even understand why you're having all these issues. The fucking movie has great performances by two people. The two leads are actually... Really? You don't think they were good performances? This Dylan guy? All right? So, at the beginning of the movie, he's like a gangly teenager. The way his physicality is, he moves as though you would expect a sort of young person who's just, you know, young dudes in the surf, whatever. And then as soon as the movie changes from after the big incident, he actually moves differently. He moves like really good, you know? So this guy actually put a bit of...
Exactly one expression the entire
yes,
film.
He's got one note. But if you think about this, though, right?
Smoldering anger. All the way through the film.
Exactly. But what else is he going to do? He can't all of a sudden break into a joke, man. He's fucking still single-minded of purpose. So he's
so single-minded, I might add, that he can overcome things that mere mortals have to worry about.
Like what?
Like, how do you earn money?
Oh, now I thought about this. So, okay.
Don't tell me the insurance payout, because it wouldn't have gone to him. They're not even married.
No. The thing is, though, he was only like a young dude who was probably, what is he, 30?
Not even.
So 20s, right?
Mid-20s.
Mid-20s, okay? Mid-20s. You don't really need money when you're in the mid-20s.
Yeah, you do. You got to eat.
You do.
And how's he paying for rent on his house? Because he spent 18 fucking months turning himself into a superhero.
Well, I actually suspect there's some old money here.
Never explained.
I know it's never explained. Never referenced. But you know what?
Poor writing.
Well, but having said that, though, right? Not poor writing, because it was for a purpose. It was for a purpose, okay?
What? Mysteriously, he can just train all day, every day?
Well, he was only out for 18 months. Most people could probably subsist on 18 months worth of
savings.
When
you're 25?
Maybe not. Maybe.
And look, he's gone to college?
I think he's doing okay, is what I'm saying. Or his family is. That's what I think.
Ooh.
However, no. One thing I will admit, though, but this is, I think, to the credit of the movie, all right? they didn't go on and get bogged down in a lot of that shit because it would have been boring.
It was boring.
It would have been boring, right? You would have said that. We were just talking about it now. And we're like, fuck this shit,
it
right?
It would have been more boring.
Yes. Well, balls to you, because after that, like, if they didn't even revisit how much pain he was in. It was just set that this is a horrific scene. It's got to do all the work for that. And now you're going to basically be this one guy for the rest of the movie. And that works fine, because if you spend any more time on that, it's boring. So I say that's fine. I say don't talk too much about it. I say don't show us too much about it. Don't.
I hear what you're saying.
Yeah.
Sure. I think probably we're already heading into spoilers. Is there anything else general thoughts-wise you want to get on before I hit the spoiler warning?
Yes. Before, if you're skipping for spoilers, Michael Keaton is awesome.
And
Michael Keaton is fucking awesome, right?
I was really disappointed in Michael Keaton.
What?
Yeah. After Birdman and after Homecoming.
This is not that
Spider-Man
kind of
Homecoming.
Oh, all right.
I was expecting him to light it up, and I just...
He did light it up once.
By the end of the movie, it felt like he had decided this is a piece of shit, and he was just going to chew the scenery.
He scenery chews like a motherfucker. I don't even understand why that's a bad thing, though.
Well, just the tonal shift from he was all dead serious and steely-eyed to...
No, but he was... Look, we'll get into spoilers and we'll talk about why that happened.
We know why. Well, yes. The listeners who've seen the film will know why. Whether they agree it needed to go to that level and he should have been reined in is another matter entirely. Okay, spoilers for American Assassin from here on out. Spoilers. Yeah, look, basically, this film... The first, that opening scene you talked about, I didn't even know the word. I think it was Ibiza.
Yeah, some resort.
And like you said, he walks up to the bar and suddenly terrorists open gunfire and people have been gunned down. The first person being the bartender
he's
talking to.
Yeah, that was pretty harsh.
There's a couple of great shots. Camera follows him into the water.
The water, very good.
And then there's a very Saving Private Ryan-esque racing through, people fleeing in all directions and people being gunned down, swing to this.
That's how it would be. He's rushing to his girl.
No, but it was really effective. I still think Steven Spielberg's lawyers might be giving the makers
it wasn't
call,
that close.
Because it was pretty bloody close.
Yeah, but he's rushing through people on a beach.
Anyway.
It's going to be kind of the same.
To her, who, with all this gunfire going on, is standing in the very edge of the surf going... Whatever his name is, Mitch.
Yeah.
Mitch. I'm like, get down, you silly, silly person.
I know. It had to go that way.
It was so stupid.
Well, the reason that I think, look, I get it, and I understand that. And there's more than one of these moments in this movie, which I will absolutely tell you about, right? Yep. How are you going to get that shot otherwise? Like, it's like, okay, I need to focus on the girl. She needs to be upright. If she's not lying on the thing, it's not the same shot. And then you got to be able to see that one hit guy turns around and just nails her, and it's like, oh, you fucking prick.
Yeah. And they went for dramatic tension, because he's so close to her when she gets shot.
Yes, and then
Look, she's already taken a bullet. She's been winged. She's on the ground crying out for him. That would have been so much better. More believable.
Yeah, I get it. I get it.
That's a small complaint of otherwise a great opening scene. Then, as alluded, we jump to 18 months ahead where he's suddenly a killing machine and he can do everything from throw knives with unerring accuracy to, you know, stride forward on a shooting range and start gutting down other people's targets. Fuck, I laughed. That was when I went, uh-oh.
No, I looked at that scene and I'm going, I see what they're going on here. He's so insanely driven that this dumb shit happens. I don't agree it worked completely, but I understand. Look, I'm not saying there are no problems with this film. All right. It's not definitely like a fucking anything that's going to change your
problems
life.
Problems are plenty.
But I maintain that this is not the type of movie that's supposed to change your life. This is the type of movie that you're supposed to couple of hours, fine, this, that, good. And I think it delivered on that. That's why I like it. So, yeah. I mean, I think the makeup Michael Keaton thing, I believe his gruff CIA veteran bit. I like that he can still handle himself in the field. You didn't like his performance? You didn't like his being tortured performance?
Yeah, he gets tortured towards the end of the film and just takes it up to 11.
Because we know what he's doing. He's doing 89 Batman. You want to get nuts? Let's get nuts. He's doing that. He's kind of doing that. And I was actually delighted to watch it. I haven't seen Bruce Wayne. That was good shit. I thought that was excellent. In fact, that was one of my... It would have been one of my favorite scenes if it wasn't him being tortured. Because I remember him like facing off with the Taylor Kitsch dude, and I thought it was good. It's good shit. So fuck you. What do you think?
Cocaine is a hell of a drug.
The reason Paul is silent for this shit is because he's too fucking cunt-headed to not poise his finger over a stupid fucking sound instead of reacting like you would in, I don't know, a podcast. So
you're mocking me, aren't you? And cocaine is a hell of a drug is exactly
all
what
shit.
Was running through my head, because this film is daft.
That's good, man.
His first initial plan, he ingratiates himself with terrorist scum and done his research because he's also got time to study whilst he's becoming the perfect killing machine, and then goes into the terrorist cell, if you will, wherever they are hiding. And his grand plan is, I have a sharp piece of something, which I'm going to cut my bonds with and kill everyone in this room. Okay. Except that doesn't happen because the CIA intervenes and kills everybody and he's so enraged that he's...
I think the understanding here was that as he was as focused as he could be to get what he wanted done, but it was sillier that he thought he could kill an entire room full of terrorists.
And then
that was a bit weird.
Gets pissy at the CIA. Like, I would have killed them all. No, you wouldn't. Yes, I would.
But maybe that's showing this is what was missing in his training. Like, I don't know. You know what? It wasn't so bad with that.
Yeah, I got into thinking mode by this point, and so I was just overanalyzing a film, which if you're going to enjoy this, you really, really, really have to detach brain. I will say that.
Sort of, yes. But again, for me, that's the deal you make when you walk into a movie like this, because it was sold the way that it came out.
I don't know. I was expecting something much more down to earth and a bit more gritty and realistic. Like, it's violent. It's absolutely violent.
Yeah, it's violent, yeah.
No qualms about that. So they went for their hard R in US terms, and they definitely hit that target. But just his... I didn't buy his training. I didn't buy the fact that CIA wanted to give who's basically a psycho, a guy who's now so caught up in his rage. He's a psychotic asshole.
No, he looked like a good asset.
They're going to turn him into an asset. He's not every fucking stage of the film, every stage of the film, he goes against orders and it somehow just happens to work out okay.
Well, the idea being that is that he was gifted for
he's
that.
A loose cannon.
He was gifted for that. Yeah, they take the good with the bad. Like, he wasn't as rigid as the other, like, army guys, but then he was also a bit of a loose cannon. But hey, they still got there. Otherwise, it would be a shit movie. I will tell you, though, something that I did have a problem with, and okay. I have a problem with this in every one of these movies. There's a scene where Taylor Kitsch has got the girl in front of him, the female agent who is like a double agent, whatever, and he's got her, and he's hostage. Dylan O'Brien has got the drop on Taylor Kitsch. It's just a case of, dude, if you shoot me, I'll shoot this girl, right? The girl then sacrifices herself and takes a bullet, and still...
He doesn't shoot him.
Taylor Kitsch gets
away.
This guy
who's a perfect killing
machine.
Exactly.
He would not...
full of psychotic rage.
Exactly.
Somehow
didn't pull the trigger.
Groans and lets the other... Yeah.
And he just runs away.
Taylor Kitsch's whole mode... By the way, Taylor Kitsch, not one of my favorite actors in the world.
Is it so?
At all. And it was interesting I chose to cast him, given they look very similar.
They look like the same guy. They look like the same guy.
In the first half of the film, I was like, is that... Whoa, well, hang on. Has he gone in for a mission already?
Yeah, it's a bit of an odd one. Yeah. I reckon that's a bit of like... look, we still got this contract with Taylor. The studio had, like, you know, he has to put him in one more movie. I don't know. It's something like that. It's an odd choice. It was an odd choice.
But I absolutely agree. I was like, oh, come on.
No, that gave me the shit. I went, why do they think this is remotely acceptable? If your gun's trained on someone and they do anything that you don't like, you just pull the trigger. There's none of this time to fucking run away.
Remember,
shit.
We've established how good a shot he is and how amazing
exactly.
he is. It's not like he's you or me holding a gun. And it's like, oops, shit, missed. Hey, sorry.
Yeah, that's right. Now, let's talk about the ending here, because... this is something that I liked about the movie, all right? So basically, there's a bomb in play. And typically, when I think of the ending of a typical type of this movie, you know The Peacemaker with George Clooney?
Yes.
George Clooney. And Nicole Kidman. And the way that movie ends is they've got a bomb and they're in some fucking city and they go into some fucking church and they manage to not quite defuse the bomb. It blows up a little bit, but basically they save the day, right? That's how one of these movies normally ends. This movie didn't end like that. This movie had a fucking, like, you know, nuclear bomb go off under the water, aiming and targeting an entire fleet of fucking Navy vessels, including shit, and it blew shit up. I thought it was fine, man. I thought it was totally good when it blew up and shit.
Number of things that were laugh out loud funny about this.
What?
The boat with the bomb on it detonates. They make a point of saying 25 miles off the coast is this armada of ships.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
The boat, the bomb detonates, as you said, underwater, because that's the only way that anyone's going to possibly survive.
Yep.
First stupid thing. We see the huge tidal wave thing erupt out from the explosion. The vacuum formed and then push everything out.
Mm-hmm.
We see the ships get assaulted by that water and rain, and they all survive. And the captain say, we wouldn't have survived if they had gone off
on, above water.
What about the coastline that was exactly the same direction another way?
Had they not gotten further away from the coast?
Because they made the point of saying the boat was on its way there.
But I think, though, if you're a boat on the water where the water has been disrupted by a nuke, right? That's not the same as being on the coast next to that
water. You know
what
I thought of?
What?
When there's an earthquake in Japan and Hawaii braces for fucking...
Yeah, you're thinking there might be a tsunami or something that comes along. I didn't think it was that kind of thing, though.
Well...
Look, I mean, shit, it's, you know, it was a nuke going
there's
up on
the clearly
water.
Would have been damage. And given what they've shown on the ships, my point is, like, there was nothing the other way. Like, everyone's all right in the city. Cool.
Maybe there just would have been a big-ass wave. That would have been it. Who knows?
That was shit. as we all understand, when a nuclear bomb goes off, there's an EMP blast that goes with it.
Now, maybe because
the helicopter.
It was underwater, so maybe it masked the EMP. What do you think?
You see what I'm saying?
I know.
This film is dumb. I was laughing at
it. But they couldn't have the helicopter crash because then they wouldn't have a good end of the movie. So I thought, you know.
They needed to find a better way to not have them on a helicopter.
Then. Yeah, I know. That was probably a little bit tough. Look, the thing is, I understand that there were problems with the execution of the ending. However, I like the fact that the ending had fucking a big nuke go off underwater and take out almost fucking aircraft carriers.
Very, very CGI.
Really? I suppose I was letting it go by then. But I didn't mind the fact. That's a big different ending. You don't get that normally. That's what I'm saying.
That is true. True, you don't normally get that. You also, I mean, it's still a safe ending because no one gets hurt and no one dies except the bad guy. Well, there's a shock.
Yeah, but again, I'm supposed to be entertained here, not pissy. So.
I'll give you one thing I did like about the film. It does seem to set up the hot Iranian agent as his new love interest, and then it goes in a completely different direction where it turns out that she's actually kind of a double agent, but not for the bad guy, but for another intelligence agent.
Yeah, now just a point on that. There was this one scene in this movie where that one gave me the shits, right? Because she, first of all, is, yes, sort of a double agent, but once he finally gets her back and gives her a gun, she's got an opportunity where she's behind Taylor Kitsch and all the bad guys putting the bomb together. She's got a gun. And instead of just fucking nailing Taylor Kitsch, who she knows is the mark, by the way.
Yep.
Right? And by the way, fucking Michael Keaton's right there getting tortured. Yep. Right? Instead of just shooting him and
she
fucking
something over.
She knocks some fucking dude that seems to know her shit's on the floor and he starts talking to her, she gets pissed off.
Oh, that's
and
right.
She shoots him.
It's the defense minister from yes.
And I'm like, you fucking silly ass woman. Yeah. If you just kill Taylor Kitsch, you can kill anyone else later whenever you want.
Like I said, the script is incredibly poor.
Yeah, that one gave me the shits, I gotta say. Yeah. So look, it's not like I said, it's not perfect, but I was entertained and that's all I ask.
All right, well then, let's score it up. What do you give it, Wayne?
72. Yeah, boy. I enjoyed it and I don't care who knows it. 72.
43.
Fuck off. You ain't no 43. 43. No way.
It's a fail.
Oh, fuck off. All right. Well.
72 and a 43.
That's a mixed review.
This is the reversal of last year's The Magnificent Seven, I think almost exactly in terms of scores. About this time of year last year, too.
Except I was right then, too.
You're so wrong. Oh, shit. Okay, well, very mixed review there for American Assassin. If it sounds like your cup of tea, go out and check it out. In fact, you probably already have seen it. If you've listened this far and you'll agree with one of us, let us know who you agree with, please.
Word.
All right, then. On the other side of this promo break, we'll be back with the top 10 acting debuts. Spoiler, doesn't include Dylan O'Brien.
What's up, guys? This is Gerald and my buddy right across from me, as always,
Andy.
We are Two Peas on a Podcast, and we want to invite you to join us weekly as we discuss. What do we talk about?
We talk about a little bit of everything.
We talk about too much.
Events,
we talk about too
politics,
much stuff.
Sports. We even talk about sports. We're dudes.
We talk about too much stuff. In fact, don't join us. It's too much. It's too complicated.
I think you're confusing them, Gerald.
We are a weekly podcast discussing current events, pop culture, hot topics.
Hot. The topics are hot.
Not the retail store, just hot topics.
Although, that was a great store.
If anything happened at Hot Topic, we would discuss that as well.
You want to get you a black Metallica shirt and some studded earrings?
Yeah, we'll talk about that. But my name is Gerald and my buddy Andy, and you can catch us on Two Peas on a Podcast. Please go to our website. It's twopeasonapod.com.
Check it out.
Check us out on Twitter at Two Peas on a Pod and subscribe via iTunes or Google Play. We hope to hear you listening. We can't yes. do that though, can we?
No, we can do it. We can hear them listening.
We hope to see that you listened via yes. our stats or whatever.
We're everywhere.
But check us out. Two Peas on a Podcast, guys.
Top 10 acting debuts. This is a list that we're putting together of people. Well, basically for me, this is something that I wanted to capture, okay?
Okay.
I'm trying to reserve the spots on this list for that moment where you as a cinema viewer, goes in, you see someone on the screen you've never seen before. You have no idea who it is, but you're blown the fuck away by their performance.
The term a debut.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is, there are debuts that were particularly big or popular. No, I'm looking for the actual performance where when I lean over to the person next to me, who the fuck's that? That person is brilliant for one reason or another. And that's the kind of mood I'm trying to get up in here. What are there were some ground rules we had though, right?
Well, we did go back and forth this week, which is not something we always do, but we wanted to clarify, are we on the same page?
Yes.
After a couple of weeks back, thought that was a good idea. And so we agreed that, look, if they were an extra in Pawn Shop,
yeah,
you know, something. Or da da da. Then the next film, there was their big role. Yeah. Then it was okay.
That was okay. As long as they haven't had any substantial long-term roles before.
And I would say if they were in 15 films doing the one-liners, then it shouldn't count either, because then it's a breakout, not a debut.
Exactly.
Yep. And we also agree that if they have prior experience on TV or stage, that's all okay too. So we're looking at their feature film debut.
Yeah, see, for me, I gotta say, I think I didn't. If they had a really good acting career in TV,
yeah, like are we talking
to
about
me, that's not a that's an
Michael old, J. Fox,
Alex yeah, Michael Keaton, J. Fox, yeah, exactly.
No, so we're not counting.
So we're not counting him. Yeah, yep. That kind of thing. So there you go.
Okay. Well, I'll lead off this week.
Oh, you can do it.
My number 10 may be slightly, I'm going to admit, enhanced by the look of said actor.
Oh, but it's the same one I've got.
It's Cameron Diaz. Yeah. As Tina Carlyle in The Mask.
Dude, I am so on board with this, right? And you know what? It was so like, I got no good reasons to tell you why this is on my number 10, other than super the fact true. That I'm a fucking little bitch, fucking corny, fucking, look, well, how old are we?
We're 18, 18, 19 when this movie right? came out, and it was right in our wheelhouse. She was stunning.
She was stunning, man. Yeah,
she was a model radiant. Turned actor, and she was in a film where she played the sexy kind of siren / girlfriend to a completely over-the-top, out-there premise.
Absolutely. And so, I couldn't believe how beautiful she was. She was like she was made of gold.
So she made an impact. Let's just go with that.
Totally, man. She was awesome. In fact, we were hanging out at the movies and stuff. And I remember Neil, a friend of ours who's Canadian, yeah. right? We're watching the movie. Halfway through, he just leans over. He's like, she's hot. And I'm like, yeah, man. Because it was just, we were just appreciating how pretty she was. So, yes, she's my number 10 as well.
That's why I put it right down at number 10.
For the, I know, I couldn't put it past anything else. But
all of the others are acting great. And look, I think she acted well in this movie. I'm not saying it was but it was more about what she brought to the role.
It was. There was the physicality probably more than anything, but my God, she was beautiful. Yeah. So, I get it.
All right, well, back to me then for my number 9.
Yeah.
This might be Cross-Up City.
Yeah, maybe, by the sounds of things.
My number 9, and I didn't even get down to writing the notes name here, sorry, is Kirsten Dunst in Interview with the Vampire.
Oh, dude, definitely.
Yeah.
That's on my list.
Just this little kid who
couldn't believe
act
it.
Up a storm, who was in a film with Tom Cruise and Brad Pitt and, I can't remember his name, Stephen Ray, and holding her own.
Big time.
And was, like, perfectly balanced between creepy at times. I want some
more. I know! And that was that whole movie, man. Yeah. It was like...
And cute as a doll.
Yep.
And then they played it, and she ended up being arguably the worst vampire of them all, because she was turned as a kid and so never developed the morals and the super ego kind of thing that have governed some of the adult vampires.
Yeah. And then she tried to kill the stat or whatever and this stuff. But that was really... No, I agree. When I saw... like I think that may have been the first time I was impressed as a child actor.
Yeah.
As
right a child there, actor. Because this is also from the same year as The Mask, so around the same time.
So, no doubt about that. That's a good one, and that's definitely on my list. My number 9... I have to give a heads up to Joe Ketchum for this one because he reminded me of it. It's LeBron James in Trainwreck.
So, yeah, that was pretty funny.
You know, and Trainwreck was a movie I did not expect to like, and I did like it. It was really good, I thought. But more importantly, and I love it when this happens, right? Someone you know from like sport or whatever turns up, and then holy shit, it's like they're actually got comedy chops. Now respect is like multiplied. The LeBron scenes here aren't your standard kind of funny either. They're not just doing gags. They're playing these long scenes which are held together somehow by how sensitive LeBron is with Bill Hader, and it's hilarious each time. And these are like 5-10 minute scenes, man, but they really, really work. So I'm always impressed. The one I wanted to put on this list was when Puff Daddy appeared in in Get Him to the Greek. Now I remember thinking to myself, I can't believe Puff Daddy is so funny. He is funny. Are you shitting me? You don't think he was funny in that movie? That whole shit was awesome. He's doing all that shit. He's like, where the fuck were you guys? I want to kill you. Smiley face. Shit, it's all good shit, man. Fuck, you gotta think about it again, man. That shit is awesome. I would have put him on this list, except I looked on IMDb and he's been in 400,000 movies before that. So that wasn't his debut. But for this one, LeBron James, Trainwreck, definitely, man. Definitely.
Yeah, that's a nice choice. Not on my list, but I understand where you're coming from. My number 8 is from a remake from your favorite filmmakers, the Coen brothers. It's the remake of True Grit from 2010. It's Hailee Steinfeld as Maddie Ross.
Honorable mention for me, because this is a movie we never really talked about, but when I saw it, I remember going, this is undoubtedly a fucking amazing movie. Could even have been like my favorite Coen Brothers type movie, but I forgot it. You keep forgetting it. But yeah, absolutely. She was amazing in it.
Just another kid role, and I guess around Kirsten Dunst age, you know, 10, 11, 12, I think she was when this movie was made.
I guess so. Just such agency for a child on screen.
Just maturity and this confidence. And I've seen her recently in a film called The Edge of 17, where I think she's 17-year-old playing a 17-year-old.
Yeah.
So, you know, 5, 6 years later.
I've heard of that movie, yeah.
And she's pretty good in that too. So she is a very good actor and going to, I think, blossom into something.
Really?
She hasn't already.
Incredible. Very severe-faced, like... I know that was the character she was playing in True Grit, but like...
Yeah, and she was nominated for Academy Award, by the way, Best Supporting Role.
Wow. Mm,
which is pretty impressive. Jeff Bridges and shit, man. I think Kirsten Dunst might have been for Interview with the Vampire too, but don't quote me on that one.
Mm, well deserved. Not bad. My number 8 is a movie we saw on Laserdisc back in the day. Movie is Bottle Rocket. And
oh, okay.
The debut is Owen Wilson.
Okay.
Now, I had no idea about obviously Wes Anderson or whatever, because that was his first movie.
Right? Debuts are plenty.
But I remember being sort of oddly charmed by this movie because it was obviously so like low budget, even though James Caan was in it. It's about a heist movie and these people are idiots. The people in it are complete morons and it's funny to watch. And Owen Wilson, this is before we got used to his whole
shtick.
Yeah, he's like, they're tied on, sir. You know, it was new back then when we saw this guy. And I know his brother was in it too. Luke Wilson's probably his acting debut as well. But Owen Wilson's the one I remember. And I remember liking the Dignan character and just kind of still... And I was happy to see him in subsequent movies after that. So he was the Cable Guy.
Owen Wilson?
Yeah, Owen Wilson. He had this really small part as the asshole boyfriend that gets his ass kicked by Jim Carrey. But like, this is later on. This is the first one.
Yeah, I don't remember much about Bottle Rocket, to be honest, but...
It's a charmer little thing show. But it's... I would actually still watch it today. Okay. I like Wes Anderson a lot more now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not so much me.
I know.
Well, my number 7 is one that's also not going to be on your list, so really? We aren't crossing up quite as much as we feared at the start.
Mm-hmm.
It's from a 2011 film called Attack the Block.
You know, I wanted to watch that for this because everyone told me that's an awesome movie.
It's pretty good. Awesome's strong.
Really?
Strong.
So I'm talking about John Boyega, yeah?
John Boyega as Moses, the central character in the film, which is basically about an apartment block in, if it's not London, it's in the UK somewhere.
Okay.
Where aliens have, for whatever reason.
Oh, really? Aliens?
Yeah. I think it's only 6 years ago and I'm struggling to remember the film. I can't remember if one alien crashes and the rest are coming to get that alien, or if they are planning in it and it basically an attack, and for whatever reason they're starting here, and he rallies his group of basically thugs to fight back against them, and starts the film as the fairly prototypical asshole gang leader. And as the film progresses, such as John Boyega's performance, you come to identify with him and get on his side. And there's a couple of great action beats in this movie, a couple of awesome scenes.
I wish I'd seen it now, not knowing that it was by aliens. That's cool.
Literally, the poster kind
of. No, exactly. I would have missed the whole thing, but yeah, it's cool. That's cool. Awesome, man.
Yeah, I won't say any more then because you should watch this movie.
Yeah, take a look.
Has a pretty cool cameo from Nick Frost as a character you might identify with.
Really?
Yes.
All right, sounds great. Okay. All right, I'll check it out. Very nice. My number 7 is Jason Statham in Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels. Because,
okay.
Why him over the other one? Why not Nick Moran? Why not...
Because Nick Moran didn't have a
career. He didn't do anything after that, man. It was really weird. Anyway, but Jason Statham was the guy I liked the most. Now, remember when the show was on and stuff like that? We never heard anyone. We only ever seen Sting before, right? That was in this movie.
And the old guy, the gangster guy.
Yeah, that guy with the short hair. Him. Yeah. But that's it, basically.
Yeah, the fucking bigs.
Yeah, that's right. That's the guy, right? So, but then everyone else in the movie with the Bring Gun and this and all this sort of shit, the great little characters. But Jason Statham's character I liked the most because he was the guy who was like smoking a big doob and fucking making stupid little jokes and stuff like that. He was also the coolest one, I thought. I didn't think Nick Moran was the coolest one.
Okay, yeah.
I thought Jason Statham was the coolest one. And I still kind of think, this is hard to say, right? I still kind of think Jason Statham's cool. I actually am fine with him. I'm actually fine with him. Like, that last Fast and the Furious movie, not the last one he did, but the one where he blew up the hospital and everything, that was cool.
He was a bad guy.
Yeah, and then they made him a good guy in the last one. But then, when he was a bad guy, he was fucking wicked in that, I thought. So, I don't know. This is a sign of those things to come. Look, don't get me wrong. I think the transporter is shit. Right? I don't fucking like it, but... Everything else, well, not everything else, a lot of other things. The Mechanic is an unusually good movie of Jason Statham's that old people like to overlook. Stuff like that. I think he's kind of cool. So,
he does a lot of straight to video on demand.
He does, and he...
Crappy.
But isn't that weird, though? He'll do some shit like Death Race or something, right? And then he'll go do, like, the talent job, and then he'll be in, like, fucking... I don't know, he's got, like, he seems to stretch on both ends.
I think he worked, like, 3 films a year for a while just to, you know, get his profile out there and make enough money for people to realize it was a one-note joke, but...
but I like him.
Until Spy, where he did play a very different role in Spy. So
But that was like a, yeah, I suppose you're right. But like, I know what you mean. But I don't know. I kind of like Jason Statham. What can I say? It's weird.
I don't dislike Jason. He's got a lot of charisma.
Yeah, that's what I think.
A lot of charisma as an actor. But okay, right, there you go. My number six also won't be on your list because it's a horror movie. And it's one of the all-time greats. I've spoken about it enough on the show, so I just want to focus on the actor, Jamie Lee Curtis.
Jamie Lee Curtis.
As Laurie Strode.
Now.
So Carpenter casts her as the virginal, is that even a word?
I've seen this movie.
Yeah, I think you watched it for a podcast with the Epic Film Guys last year.
And again, it's shot back then, so it's like that back then. But go on.
And she brings that exact quality of someone who's nice and trusting, and she's not the bitchy one. But when her life goes on the line, she fights back and fights to survive and save the kid that she's babysitting as well. So, she manages to encompass both the lovely, nice, down-to-earth girl and the hard-as-nails.
Mm.
Chick is going to fight to the bitter end, i.e. the final girl.
Yeah, I think I agree with that.
And has a set of lungs on her, unlike many others. So she was a literal scream queen.
Oh, okay. Did I read that they're doing another Halloween?
Yeah, thing? I just heard that drop this week that she's coming back for another Halloween, like somehow. So they obviously got rid of a retcon some of the sequels because, I'm pretty sure she got killed off at one of the earlier sequels. Yeah.
They can just do that. I fell in love with Jamie Lee Curtis during Trading Places.
Okay.
Do you remember that?
Yeah, that's what, 3-4 years after, or maybe 5 years after this.
Big, huge fan. Anyway, so nice call. Nice one.
Thank you.
All right, my number six is, surprised it took this long to turn up, although it's probably high up on the list. Anyway, Natalie Portman in Leon.
Oh.
No, really? Okay. All right. If you've only ever seen Natalie Portman in Star Wars, people, you need to just forget all of that shit because it was a bad time for her and she was doing what George said and it sucked. Natalie Portman is in fact a wonderful actress. And when we saw Leon back in the day, we of
also
course...
Also 1994, I believe.
94, yeah. We couldn't, like, I can tell you something, we hate kids in film now, but we certainly hated them back then because we were kids.
I hate kids in film now. I would point to last week's review of It to suggest otherwise.
But I think kids in film are better now because just back then it was not so much. Yeah. But in this particular case...
Shining example of awesomeness.
Right, exactly. And Luc Besson, no less, Paul's favorite director.
It is truly amazing that a hack director like Luc Besson managed to elicit this performance from a 12-year-old girl.
To be fair, it is very unusual that you make a movie this good and then you go and make some piece of shit. Well, we like the Femme Nikita anyway, but you're right. Her in this movie was so viable, and it was, she was still in school when she was shooting it and stuff, and it made such an, and we've talked about there's a bad cut of the movie where it's a little too icky, but the one that we saw, it complimented and made you believe about Leon completely. So she nailed the shit out of it, man. Even the weird awkward scenes where they were singing or whatever, like, with the dress-ups and stuff.
Well, because she's playing, she's falling in love with him, that's even in that first cut. But
I get that
innocent,
now that you tell me that. But
innocent child.
It is. It's very, I never thought it was weird.
No. But he's the father figure she never had.
Yes.
He's her protector.
That's right.
And she's trying to make him feel okay too, not in a bad way, but just in the way that she knows, which is let's have fun, let's play together,
exactly. And
I want to be around you.
I had no problems with any of that stuff, and that's why it was good. It was this really good protector movie. But I mean, for a kid like that to nail it so quick, that's the director's
work. That scene where she's standing in front of his door when
I know, Gary Oldman, and she's knocking on the door,
and she's crying. She's like, please.
That is amazing. That is amazing. Chills. That scene. Chills. Totally. All right.
Nice pick. Way too low. The hell you've rated above it, because there's very little that I would rate above it.
You think?
Well, my number five is from a film I don't think you've seen, and it was one I watched this year. I was a bit embarrassed to say that it took me 4 years to see it. It's from 2013, a Paul Greengrass film. It's Bukhard Abdi as Muse in Captain Phillips. I am the captain now.
You say Paul Greengrass?
He directed the movie.
I thought you said Peter Greenaway. I'm like, what?
No.
Yeah, what the fuck are you watching? Anyway, go on. All right, go on. Oh, really? I haven't seen it either.
Plucked from obscurity. I don't know where they found this guy, but he plays a Somali warlord pirate, or Somali pirate, I should say, who is shrewd, cunning, ahead of the game.
Really?
Squaring off against Tom Hanks and trying to take over his vessel and get money for the contents and ransom back the dudes.
Is this a good movie?
Yeah.
Really?
Yep. And from all reports, fairly accurate to how it all actually played out. Yep.
Shit.
I mean, obviously, there's dramatic license and whatever.
Yeah.
But he is great because somehow, and here is the film's great conceit, and I'm going to say it again, Bukhard Abdi's great performance as an actor. You don't hate him.
Is that so?
You kind of understand why he's having to do this.
I wouldn't have got that from the trailer with the "I am the captain now." Mm. I would have thought he'd be just an asshole that you hate.
Obviously, you're still side with Tom Hanks' character. You want him to live and survive.
Oh, that's good. If you can like the villain genuinely and then spend time with him and be happy about it, that's a huge achievement. Mm-hmm. All right, I'm going to see that now. That's on the list. Nice. Well, my number five is Interview with the Vampire, Kirsten Dunst, man. So we're going to flick right back to you for your number
four. All right. My number four is... I'd forgotten about it. And I honestly had no idea because he's probably the oldest debut.
Okay.
Of an actor on my list. Because as you would imagine, most of these tend towards the younger side of the spectrum. Mm. But this is from District 9.
That's my number four too! Yes. Charlton Copley.
Charlton Copley in this great Neil Blomkamp's great sci-fi action film, which somehow starts as a mockumentary
it's
thing.
It's a real one over time, this movie.
And then turns on its... You don't even notice. That's the great thing about
it. It's so well made.
And in the middle of it is this character, Vikas Vandermeer.
Well done.
Yeah, I think that's how you pronounce it. And he starts out as this bureaucrat who's involved with putting these aliens who live on the outskirts of Johannesburg in this shanty town and shifting them and moving them around and basically towing the party line.
Mm-hmm.
And then through events becomes quite literally one of these aliens. And his breakdown from this bureaucrat to being this freedom fighter, really, breakdown, transformation.
No, absolutely.
Is amazing to behold.
Do you know what nailed that whole thing, though? At the beginning, right, when he's like doing the documentary and he's like showing them, you hear the popping, the things on the doors on it, and those things blowing up. And he was just so matter-of-factly talking about it that he became, not charming is not the word, but he was very interesting to watch.
Mm.
And that became the thing about the movie. And then when it turns out that he turns into an alien or whatever and all this sort of shit happens, you are on board with that too, because the movie goes silent after that. He can't talk anymore. All that stuff that he can do is
Towards the very end.
Yeah. Amazing movie, and he's a really amazing guy debut.
They would have gone for, like, he's perfect as a bureaucrat, but then later on when he's having to, you know, fight back and...
Hmm. And I'll tell you something else. I did not think him as Murdoch would work, but it did. Now, I'm not saying I love the A-Team or anything that. Him being Murdoch, I was actually pretty fine with it as a guy who was a huge fan as a kid.
Yeah.
So, Charlton Copley's good, man. I get it. I totally get it. This is a good debut.
Yeah, unfortunately, I think he needs to fire his agent and get a better one because his films are going progressively worse.
Harry Hardcore Henry or whatever?
Yeah, it was in Hardcore Henry.
Yeah.
He's in a pretty garbage film called Open Grave.
Mm.
Yeah, so I think his stock has fallen as Blomkamp's has fallen as well.
Yeah, after that fucking whatever other robot movie.
Yeah, Chappie.
Yeah, okay. Mm. All right, well, that was my number four too, man.
Oh,
so.
Right, this one has to be on your list. It absolutely has to be because you're the person that brought it to my attention.
Okay.
Okay, from all the way back in 1996, it's Edward Norton's debut as Aaron Stampler.
Do you know in American History X?
No, Primal Fear.
Yeah, it's not on my list. What? It's an honorable mention.
How is this film...
I loved this movie. I'm surprised it's on your list.
Well, the movie's okay, but it's what makes it okay.
Yeah.
Is
his whole performance.
And he beat out apparently 2,000 applicants for this role, including Leonardo DiCaprio, James Marsden, Edward Furlong, Will Wheaton, and Matt Damon.
So wow.
They cast him against them. Some of them were names by that point.
Mm.
And he won the role. And he owns this movie.
I'm not Gregory surprised Hoblet. Because if you remember how you might think how Ed Norton looks now, right? Mm-hmm. And you got that picture in his head. Look at this movie. He doesn't look anything like that. He looks like this round-headed, floppy-headed kind of this really
choir boy
with this weird like face. Like, and his face looked like completely unassuming and you know. And that's what he's doing, obviously. But that's why he won that role. Those other guys were too good-looking. Those other guys looked too capable. This guy was just weird.
I argue he also won the role because clearly he killed it.
And he killed. And the point is, sorry, it's not just his look, but he absolutely obviously made it work. So, yeah. I agree. That's a good call.
Devastated. Didn't put on your list, Wayne. That's a Marky Mark return to.
What? No.
It's out there. I got three that I just couldn't let go.
All right. Well. What are your top two that you think are better? Top three. All right, let's hear number three.
Okay, top three is Christian Bale in Empire of the Sun.
Yeah, I just watched this movie. I thought it was shit.
Oh, what? Oh, now look, to be fair, I haven't watched it since it came out. All right? But I remember thinking at the time, because this is back to Steven Spielberg and this and that and whatever. But I remember being similarly afflicted with like the Kirsten Dunst thing when I saw this kid on this show.
This was even earlier, like 87?
Yeah, so probably this was the first time that I was impressed with the child performance. I also didn't know it was Christian Bale. And when I saw him later on American Psycho, I didn't know it was that kid as well. But Even so, this is just pure harrowing, man, because it's about the war and this and that and the kid's starving and he's trying to get, you know, rice from this guy and all these other things. It was actually an amazing movie, but I was amazed that it was all about that kid and that was his first time acting. So, I don't know, big fan. Christian Bale, Empire of the Sun.
Yeah, it just didn't do anything for me, that movie.
And, I suspect if I watch it again now...
His role, and I get some people jumped on this and on social media as well here, but for me, I was like, eh. And maybe it's that thing watching it 30 years after it was
probably
made.
Because it had a lot more impact when I saw it when it came out.
Yeah.
So, and even though I knew nothing about the war or whatever, but yeah, that's it. So yeah, that's my number three.
Wow. And better than Matilda in The Profession.
Yeah. Yeah. Matilda was a more contemporary role. This particular one here, he was carrying the movie. So it was a different,
Okay, I see that point. My number two is the aforementioned Matilda. It's Natalie Portman in The Professional.
Yeah, I get it. I get it being that high for you. All right, man. My number two, maybe an unexpected one. It's Suraj Sharma from The Life of Pi.
Oh,
yeah. The Life of Pi is probably one of the most amazing movies I've ever seen, and I'm really, really upset that I never saw it in 3D at the cinema. I only saw it on big screen, like fucking Blu-ray. But one, purely because it's the most beautiful. I think it's actually the most beautiful movie I've ever seen.
I can
say
that.
But secondly, everything else about it was equal measures harsh and wonderful and just eye-popping. And I don't know, that dude who played that role, that was his acting debut, and he just nailed the shit out of it. I was really impressed. Was it Ang Lee? Ang Lee did this movie.
Yep.
Yeah. That's where I actually realized that Ang Lee... Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, you can see this guy is an absolute artist genius. But this movie here is next level. Like, it just went... Okay, here's everything your brain could possibly imagine in terms of color and like concept and focus and vision and everything. Just take it all in one scene. I was amazed scene after scene. So that's why I was always impressed at this guy. So Life of Pi, Suraj Sharma is his name.
Okay, well, I know you're a big fan of the movie, and I guess it is a debut. So
there you are.
I would have said, yeah, the memorable parts of the film are the visuals, less the acting, but
the whole ambiguous this was the lion, his, you know, mother or whatever, all that sort of shit was, you know, that shit captured the crap out of me. It actually, I walked away from it learning something. How about that? That's why it hit me so hard.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, here we are then. Number ones.
We've got to have the same number one, by the way.
I think we do.
We've definitely got to have the same number one.
Well, before we get there though, we're going to recap. Well, I'll recap my list.
Word.
And then I guess we'll see. Number 10 for me, Cameron Diaz in The Mask. 9, Kirsten Dunst in Interview with the Vampire. 8, True Grit, Hayley Steinfeld as Maddie Ross. Attack on the Blocks, John Boyega as Moses at number 7. The iconic Jamie Lee Curtis as Laurie Strode in Halloween for number 6. Captain Phillips and Buckard Abdi as Muse at number 5. 4, Chateau Copley's Vilks Vandermeer in District 9. Did I say that already? Yeah. Number 3, Primal Fear, Edward Norton as Aaron Stampler. Number 2, Natalie Portman as Matilda in Leon the Professional. And my number 1
is, of course,
The best. Debut performance. It was from an older gentleman as well.
Sure.
Are we still on the same page there,
Wayne?
Sure. It is in one of the greatest films of all time ever. Eat a dick, Nick, from Epic Film Guys. It's Die Hard's Alan Rickman as Hans Gruber.
That's my number one. Series.
Yes.
So cool. Woo-hoo. All right. For the record, Hans Gruber. Sorry, please. This is your pick.
No, it's our pick.
He's one of the most iconic, impossibly hard to forget bad guys ever put on screen. I remember when I saw Die Hard, and the bad guy was this Alan Rickman dude who just wore these fucking sweet suits and was all had a goatee and was European and had a gun and he's like, you know, Shechen Defense, and shit, you know, all that sort of shit, right? You know, he's like, tell him to shoot the glass or whatever. I was like, that shit is good, right? But I remember thinking to myself, wow, that's an actual career move. If I just wanted to be that guy, I could just be a supervillain and I'd wear suits all the time. It'd be awesome. I remember thinking this guy was cool as shit and I don't know, it was an option like that.
Perfectly said. As shit is about... the perfect way to describe Alan Rickman.
He really was. Yep. And I didn't, obviously had never seen him before, but even his, like, you know, just the way he smiles and he's saying shit and he's like, I'm an exceptional thief. You know, all fucking cool shit.
And as I'm moving up to kidnapping, I think you should afford me the proper respect. Obviously can't do the voice, but
fucking great. No, that whole thing was written beautifully.
And even when he gets found by John and
Was even more baller.
And he changes his accent and is pretending to be Bill Clay.
Yes.
Yeah.
And he fucking read it off the thing and like, this guy's smart as fuck, man. So cool, I thought.
Exceptional suit. I to myself.
Yes, that was the best bit. That whole shit was the best. And then when he's like, you're just going to have to kill me. Okay, boom. Mm-hmm. Like, holy shit. All of a sudden becomes a different kind of guy. Wow.
And different movie, really. At that yes. point, goes from being kind of...
It totally does. And so he won't be joining us for the rest of his life. You know, fucking hell, what a cold prick. This is good.
And then the infamous scene where he dies, where John McTiernan didn't tell him that they're going to drop him. So that look on his face is 100% not acted.
It was, and I remember when the first time I saw that look, I was like, he looks kind of stupid because he's like, this, but it was real. So now I get it more and I like it more. But yeah, it was, that was, what a fucking prick.
Yeah. But I guess it was a first time.
Nope, actually, he nailed it. He's like, yeah, fuck you, man.
He's a veteran of the stage.
Yeah, but you got a problem? Take it up with your agent.
Absolutely one of the greatest villains of all time. We will be doing the top 10 villains at some point and undoubtedly on my list.
No,
everything you've said and just clever, the way he handles everything and everybody, his response to John McClane, just their banter back and forth.
I prefer this kind of villain to any superhero villain. Agreed. I always
do. I agree. He's incredible.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's our list, but can you go through and give a quick rundown of your 10 through 1?
Yeah, sure. 10, Cameron Diaz. 9, LeBron James. 8, Bottle Rock. Sorry, Owen Wilson. 7, Jason Statham. 6, Natalie Portman. 5, Kirsten Dunst. 4, Sharlto Copley. 3, Christian Bale. 2, Suraj Sharma. And of course, my number one is Alec Rickman.
And Suraj Sharma was in what film again? Because no one's recognizing
the
that
Life
name.
Of Pi.
There is our top 10 acting debuts. What did you think? Did we nail it? Or did we miss something important? Do let us know through our social media. And then before we do hear what people have written back to us this week, Wayne, do you have any honorable mentions?
Yeah, I put in Eddie Murphy as Reggie Hammond in 48 Hours.
That's my only honorable mention.
Is that? Oh, okay, weird. I like that one. This is a weird one. Have you ever seen Ender's Game?
Yes.
All right, that kid.
Don't
in
say
it,
Asa Butterfield.
I thought he was good. I thought he was good. I'm not putting. It's not in my thing, but like I remember being oddly surprised at the time. And there's a movie called The Killing Fields back in the day.
Yeah.
This guy who was actually in The Killing Fields. Yes. And it was an amazing movie.
Can't remember his name, but yes.
Heng S. Ngo is his name. Yeah. So, but that's it. That's all I had.
All right. Very nice. Let's now get on to listener feedback.
Listener
Kicking off listener feedback with what we got on Twitter from Gidget Von LaRue, mentioned her at the top of the show. She had Rickman, Die Hard, Bullock from The Vanishing, DiCaprio from What's Eating Gilbert.
Wait, that was her first role?
I haven't checked.
Sandra Bullock? Wow,
that's
okay.
What Gidget says.
Not bad.
Kate Winslet from Heavenly Creatures, Russell Crowe from Romper Stomper, Christian Bale from Empire of the Sun, Norton from Primal Fear, Angelina Jolie from Hackers, and Colin Farrell from Minority Report.
Yeah, shit, that was a good one. That was his debut. Mm. Fuck, how did I miss that one? Good one, Gidget. That was good.
Well, there you go. You've obviously got Wayne's vote there.
That was real good.
From Gerald on 2Ps on a podcast, Natalie Portman, Leon, Alan Rickman, Die Hard, Elizabeth Olsen in Martha, Mary, something or other, Marlene.
Okay, Magdalena.
Yeah, that's the one.
Mm-hmm.
Chateau Copley, District 9, Hayley Steinfeld in True Grit.
Mm.
Uncomfortably Charmin said Tupac in Juice.
Yeah, I've heard of that as well.
Mm-hmm. Okay. CNC Geekcast agree with me. Buckad Abdi in Captain Phillips. His performance was spellbinding, especially considering it was his debut.
Wow.
Poop Culture went with Matthew McConaughey as Wooderson in Dazed and Confused.
I haven't seen it still.
Still haven't seen Dazed.
Okay, it's really, that's a big one. Okay.
Well, right. For you.
Yeah, I suppose you're
it's
right.
It's an absolute travesty that sure. You have not seen that film.
Because it's stoner stuff?
Sure.
Okay, yes. Sure. Okay.
Laura said Cuba Gooding Jr. in Boys in the Hood.
Yeah, that's a good call.
I thought so too. Our Podfix Network bros who spiked the pun said baby-faced Edward Norton in Primal Fear.
Mm-hmm.
Amazing performance. Pity he turned out to be such an ass clown.
Yes.
Which is something I meant to say when we were talking about it. Bit of a megalomaniac.
What, the character?
No, Edward Norton.
Really? What, yeah. As an actor, you mean?
Yes. Incredibly hard to work with. Has a horrible reputation.
Yeah. Is that why the Hulk didn't happen in the Avengers?
Part of. So the scuttlebutt goes.
I see.
Matthew M., Jamie Lee Curtis in Halloween, Glenn Close in World According to Garp, and Alan Rickman in Die Hard. Then from Steve at Everything I Love from Movies podcast. I'm sorry, Everything I Learn from Movies podcast. Sorry, Steve. Ed Norton and Margot Robbie.
Mm-hmm. Margot Robbie being...
In, I believe, what was the... Wolf of Wall Street.
Oh, good point. Yeah, Margot Robbie... Shit, I forgot about that.
Mm.
I mean, she was on Neighbours or whatever, but yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Oh, that's a good point. But they would not know that.
They would not know that. You're right. Yeah,
so that's absolutely fair. Mackenzie Lambert, Truman Capote in Murder by Death, Natalie Portman in The Professional, Alan Rickman in Die Hard, and Jamie Lee Curtis in Halloween. We get, and then same with Wes from the VHS podcast, Natalie Portman and Leon. We seem to have a couple of real favorites.
It's a tight, it's a tight sort of like field.
Beer Man said Kate Winslet in Heavenly Creatures. So another vote there.
You liked that, didn't you?
Yeah, Peter Not Jackson really. Film. Peter Jackson, yeah. Bridging the gap between his low budget roots and getting into.
But it wasn't that good?
Not my favorite. Okay. Let's just put it that way. Po' Boys podcast agreed, Wayne. Cameron Diaz in the mask.
Yeah, man.
So we're not the only pervs out there. Michael Wright said, Eddie Murphy in 48 Hours, Cameron Diaz in the mask, Matthew Broderick in War Games, and Kevin Bacon in Animal House. And I mistakenly thought Kevin Bacon's first film was Friday the 13th. So I stand corrected. Thank you for that, Michael.
Matthew Broderick, that's a good call too.
Mm. Ashley Wright added, Christopher Lloyd in One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
Them seen it.
So, as well as David Della Rocco in Boondock Saints.
I have barely seen this movie. I can't really remember it.
I can't remember that.
Is that Billy Connolly one?
Yeah. Yeah. With the dude from Walking Dead in it.
Is it good?
Yeah. The first Boondock Saints is pretty damn great, I might suggest. Following on from last week's very, very important Steven Seagal watch, Adam Howe had Steven Seagal in Above the Law.
That was actually a good show, though. Steven Seagal had a good five movies, right? It was like Above the Law, Out for Justice, Mark for Death, fucking Under Siege. Is there another one? There may have been another
Under Siege 2, Dark Territory?
No, I actually quite liked Executive Decision.
Yeah.
Because he bought the farm real quick.
Yep.
But he had like five good movies and everything else just blew hard.
It absolutely did. True Basher said Frances McDormand as A.B. Marty in Blood Simple, just divine, what an actress, and honorary mentions to, again, Rickman and Portman.
Mm.
Last one from Twitter, this is from Dino Red, gave a whole list, including Orson Welles and Citizen Kane, Sidney Poitier in No Way Out, Natalie Portman, Edward Norton, yeah, there we go, so a whole bunch there.
Mm-hmm.
To our listener feedback and a couple of responses there, Nick Spinarski, we should shout him out, he is a true champion who every week summarizes our lists. Does a wonderful job, Nick. Really wanted to thank you for that. Here is his list from 10 through 1, and not surprisingly, does have some similarities to ours. That said, number 10, Carrie Coon in Gone Girl. She was a sister, Ben Affleck's sister.
She's awesome.
Eva Green in The Dreamers at 9. Here we go. In Atonement, Saoirse Ronan in Atonement. Have you seen that movie?
I've seen bits of it, yeah.
Emma Stone in Superbad for number 7. 6, Amy Adams in Drop Dead Gorgeous. Actually, not that similar at all. I'll take it back. A few people mentioned this. Jason Schwartzman in Rushmore.
Yep.
4, Edward Norton in Primal Fear. 3, Cameron Diaz in The Mask. 2, Natalie Portman, Leon. And number 1, Alan Rickman, Die Hard.
There it is.
There it is, Nick. Thank you very much for that. Jordy Davidson, Michael Jordan in Space Jam. 2, Kevin Bacon in Animal House. 8, Cameron Diaz in The Mask. Actually, there's quite a few people. Jason Statham in Lock, Stock and 2, Smoking Barrels at 7. Matthew McConaughey in Dazed and Confused. Portman, Rickman, and then Robin Williams in Popeye.
He was in Walking Mindy before, but yes, he...
That's a good point. We would have ruled him out. Yes, we would have, yep. 2, Lauren Bacall in To Have and Have Not. And number 1, Julie Andrews in Mary Poppins. And he said, don't judge me. Nice. Last one then to wrap up this week's feedback from Emily at the Story Behind podcast, Christian Bale in Empire of the Sun and Julie Andrews in Mary Poppins.
There you go.
Thanks to everybody who gets back to us once again. We're sorry we can't get to everybody's feedback. We really, truly do appreciate it. And it does help shape our lists, I have to say. Wayne is now all over this. Is like, oh, yeah, that's a good idea. Like you mentioned, Joe Ketchum's shout out of LeBron James.
Yeah. No, I've got a whole different thing now. I actually construct my lists differently after you guys chime in. So very good call. Nice work, guys.
All right. Well, let's wrap it up then by talking about what's coming up the next couple of weeks on the countdown. Wayne, what are we doing next week?
Well, next week's very fucking exciting because it's the Kingsman The Inner Circle review.
The Golden Circle?
The Golden Circle? I've written inner. Yeah, it's golden.
What you do in your own time.
Yeah, right. You would think it would always be golden with me, but what are you going to do?
I'm actually referring to inner.
Oh, yeah, sure. What's inner, then it's golden. Oh, shit got nasty quickly. Damn. Oh,
we went so long. We almost got to the very end of the podcast.
Woo! So. Talking about urethras and shit. Anyway, on the back of that, we're going to count down our top 10 upbeat endings in movies. Endings. Happy endings. Good shit, people.
Once again, referring to Wayne Sex. I mean, happy endings.
Fair enough. That was not bad. And what are we doing after that?
The week after that, there is no major film review. Instead, we're just going to be focusing on the countdown. And a couple of little segments will be making a return for you then.
Pure comedy.
And the countdown will be top 10 films that redeem themselves on a second viewing. So films you watched the first time round and you went, nah, and then somehow you came back to them. Somehow they were on the TV as you walked past, or your partner or a friend said, come on, sit and watch this with me. And you went, that was good.
Why did I miss it the first time? Exactly.
How did I miss this?
Yes.
That is going to be that week's countdown. Thank you so much, everyone, for joining us yet again for the countdown. It's been a pleasure to entertain you for an hour and a bit.
I have had a good time myself. So, you know, thank you once again for listening in, guys. Until next time, my name is Wayne.
My name is Paul. And to cut Wayne off before he starts, this has been The Soundboard.
The Shitboard.
Yeah, baby.
The Shitboard. Yeah. Shitboard. Shit. Fucking long shit.
See you next week.
See you guys.
Get the bi-weekly bars going, and I'll turn down the soundboard because this is low. Here we go.
Sorry, cunt. Sorry.
What are you, a fucking moron?
Okay, go ahead and use that before the show even. Other than that, I'm on the mend.
All right, well, we start every episode as we do. All right, very nice. Let's now get on to listener feedback.
Listener feedback!
We might be in sync with our list, but not in our timing.
This was a podcast from the Podfix Network. You can check out more shows like it at podfixnetwork.com.